Many kids, if not most, have fallen into bad sleeping routines over the summer. And coming up next, we're going to talk about how to get them back onto a regular schedule. I'm Jill Nadeau, and this is the Larry Mueller Show. Our guest is Dr. Roshna Tiwari. She is a pediatric sleep specialist with UW Health Kids and clinical assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Are your kids not getting enough sleep? Do you have problems getting them up for school? What sleep problems are maybe you experiencing? Well, join in by calling 800-642-1234 or send us an email at ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Tiwari, hi. Thank you for being with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, this is a really important subject right about now because kids just... they like to sleep in, don't they, when there's no school?
Right, right. So they're like, this is my free time, you know, want to go to bed late and want to wake up late. We see this a lot.
So why is it so important for kids to establish healthy sleeping habits, not just for school, but for any time?
Yeah, it's important because, you know, our sleep affects what we do during daytime. So if you don't get enough sleep at night, you're not going to be able to function well during daytime. It affects memories. It affects how you feel during daytime. So that's why it's very important to have a regular sleep schedule so that you don't get sleep deprived.
Especially for children, they're trying to learn and you really right. aren't real receptive, are they, if they're tired?
Right, right. So it does affect their focus in classroom. They'll be falling asleep in class. It does affect their growth if there is chronic sleep insufficiency. So it is really important to get enough sleep.
So how old a child is determines how much sleep they have, right? What are the guidelines for that?
So again, sleep requirement varies with different individuals. So there are different recommendations. So National Sleep Foundation recommends, again, kids from 6 to 13 age is 9 to 11 hours, and then 14 to 17 years old, somewhere around 8 to 10 hours of sleep. So if we fall in that range, and it may be sufficient. But that being said, some kids, again, range of 6 to 13 may do well with 9 hours of sleep, and some may need all the way up to 11 hours of sleep. So it is highly individualized and variable.
What's the best way for parents or caregivers to figure out how much their child needs?
How do you know that, right? Yeah. So if they wake up in the morning saying they're refreshed, they are not tired during the daytime, they are not falling asleep in class, they say that, yeah, you know, I have good energy during daytime, then that tells us that probably they got enough sleep. That's same for adults and same for kids.
So basically, you want to kind of keep a schedule of when your child went to bed, when they fell asleep. Hopefully, they fell asleep fairly soon, and when right. they get up and how they react. So that's a good way to kind of keep track of it, right?
Right. So you know, we kind of recommend try to have a pre-bedtime routine before their bedtime. So try to find out what is your child's ideal sleep schedule. So one could go to bed around like 8, fall asleep by 9, wake up around 6 in the morning, then 9 to 6 is their sleep schedule. So then you want to stop any of the electronics that emits blue light at least an hour before bedtime, have a pre-bedtime routine, and stick with that even during weekends. And whenever there are longer holidays, not only summer break, during winter break, spring break, try to stick with that schedule. So if we stick with that schedule, then that's, you know, again, when the school restarts, it's not going to be a problem or struggling to wake them up in the morning. What I hear most of the time is that they will just not wake up in the morning. And it's a lot of struggle.
What age group is it that usually is least likely to get enough sleep? Is it their teenagers?
Yeah, it's mostly that what we see is teenagers. They are either going to bed late, but they have to wake up on time because they have to go to school. So that age is the age where we see a lot of a lot of sleep deprivation, sometimes which leads to chronic sleep deprivation as well.
And I've read that that age group, our school schedules really don't mesh with what their schedule internally is it, where they like to stay up late and sleep late. How do you reconcile the two?
Right, meaning, you know, they need to go, like,
they're just not tired. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, I mean, definitely their body, their rhythm can be delayed. And then, and again, our current, the school system, they have to wake up earlier. So, yeah. And then what happens, again, they go into that chronic sleep deprivation mode and they're just not able to focus well in the class, falling asleep. They're just tired. It does affect their quality of life as well. So,
and some schools I know have gone towards a little bit later start time for some high schools, especially. I know myself, having done some substitute teaching that first class, it was like teaching to little zombies because they just were not there. So what should you do if your child just doesn't fall asleep when they go to bed?
Right. So again, insomnia, it's a huge chapter, right? So we need to look into what is causing your insomnia. But the common causes can be not following good sleep hygiene, meaning not going to bed on time, watching or, you know, being in video games, or watching TV, computer, cell phones, or sometimes it could be school homework or late sports or activities that are pretty late. That can affect their ability to fall asleep in a timely manner. So again, if we can follow a healthy sleep habit, that would take care of, if that's the reason their insomnia, then definitely that'll take care of that. Irrespective of if there are other reasons for insomnia, like insomnia can be from, again, you know, any underlying mental health conditions. It can be from any underlying movement disorders or sleep apnea. There are so many things that can cause it. So irrespective of whatever the cause is, we recommend a healthy sleep habit to help them sleep better at night.
When should they be taken to a professional? When it gets become a problem, or how do you know?
Right. So let's say, you know, they're going to bed on time, but they're just not falling asleep. And then they're, you know, it's a struggle to wake them up in the morning. They're not taking naps during daytime. Although like they are that age where they don't need nap during daytime, but they, you know, they've started taking naps, or although they don't sleep enough at nighttime, they say they're tired, but I don't need nap. Then, you know, you have to start looking into what is causing this, understanding that they have followed good sleep habits, good sleep hygiene. They've tried all of those things at home. Then I think it will be a good time to talk to your primary care provider, your provider, to go over what is the cause behind it. Some things that you can monitor would be, is there, like, you know, do they have their phones in their room? And actually, you know, kind of, although they are going to bed on time, is that affecting that? If they have TV in room, are they watching it? Or if they are not doing any of those things, is there any other reason for insomnia? Or what we say, more poor sleep quality, could be, do they snore? Are they a restless sleeper? Do they kick legs when they are asleep? And again, nobody watches someone when they are asleep. But again, kind of intermittent check on your child can be helpful when you see a provider. To give those information. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, like we had mentioned, school's going to be open in the next few weeks. When should we start transitioning our kids to get up early?
Right. So again, it depends on how much has been affected during summertime and what is your goal. So again, if the goal is 9 to 6, somewhere around there, and your child is now falling asleep around 11, then, you know, you have that 2 hours to meet there. So they might be asleep at 11 and waking up at 8, you know, so they're, you have to kind of sift that whole pattern. So I generally recommend start several weeks prior, depending on, again, how much you have to reach. So 15 minutes is what I recommend. 15 minutes, you know, you start the bedtime 15 minutes prior, and then you wake them up 15 minutes earlier than what their current sleep schedule is. And do it in an increment of 15 minutes every 2 to 3 days, making sure that they're falling asleep in a timely manner when you make that increment. And then if they are not falling asleep, so let's say you said, okay, like 11 o'clock is their bedtime right now. You want to do 10:45 and you started that. And then you notice that, you know, they're not falling asleep by 10:45. So that 15 minute increment has not helped. Then you probably have to give them some methods of relaxation, like they could, you know, draw, read, or listen to relaxing music, something that just helps them to relax more. And if that doesn't help, then probably, you know, you should not be moving their sleep schedule forward. And probably you'll need a provide us help at that point to really see how to manage their sleep.
So what about when they wake up? I mean, it's normal for people to be, you know, a little groggy, tired when they wake up, but how much is like too much? How do you know that that's not just normal and they're just kind of sleep deprived?
So when you get adequate sleep, when you wake up in the morning, you should feel rested. You should feel okay. Yeah, some may feel like, I don't want to go to school, or, you know, we may feel, I don't want to go to work, but you should feel like rested when you wake up in the morning. And when you come out, you know, of your morning routine, then you should feel, you know, that you will be awake, not tired when you are in your classroom, at work. So that's how you're going to know whether you're kind of really sleep deprived or not. If you're feeling like, you know, when I'm quiet doing activities, I'm falling asleep. Yeah, that tells us that there is some kind of sleep issue. Not 100% sure if it is only sleep deprivation or is there something else going on as well.
And you said about screens, because we're all very guilty about that. And an hour before bedtime is a good rule of thumb?
Right. So, you know, somewhere around an hour before bedtime, I usually recommend turn off your TV, turn off your cell phones, you know, tablets. If you do video games, turn all of them out so that your brain has that time to really release a hormone called melatonin to help you fall asleep and stay asleep. And then do some quiet things. Try to have that pre-bedtime routine where, okay, I'm gonna, you know, read books. If your child have grown out of that reading books, then do some other kind of quiet activities, like listening to relaxing music. Try to follow the same, you know, same schedule and till it's your bedtime. So till it's your, you know, falling asleep time.
Mm-hmm. And is it going to cause a problem if we are always checking on them to see if they're actually sleeping or not?
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, we don't want to keep going there. I mean, depending on the age also. Right?
Sure.
So if it is smaller kids, they may, you know, depending on what the issues are. Sometimes some kids, you can do like intermittent check-ins on them.
Okay.
But if they are like teenagers, they may not want that. So, yes, it is tricky. And again, if needed, some providers can also help manage that part.
Okay, we are talking with Dr. Rachna Tiwari, and she is a pediatric sleep specialist with UW Kids and clinical assistant professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Do you have questions about sleep habits? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. We'll be right back after this look at the news. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for spending some of your time with us today. We are talking about the importance of sleep with our guest. She is Dr. Rachna Tiwari, a pediatric sleep specialist with UW Health Kids. And she's a clinical assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. How do you help your kids go to sleep? Are you having problems falling asleep yourself? Well, we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. So, Dr. Tiwari, one thing we didn't talk about before we went to the break was the effect of caffeine on kids. I know that so many younger kids now are drinking coffee and soda that's high in caffeine. What effect does that have?
Yeah, so caffeine can, it can cause increase in what we call a sleep latency, meaning it can cause difficulty falling asleep. And it can also cause fragmentation of sleep. So ideally, we recommend 4 to 6 hours prior to bedtime to avoid caffeine. And also to look into how much caffeine you drink during daytime, because it can not only affect just the sleep, it can affect the overall health and can increase heart rate and can cause irritability. And that in turn can also affect how you sleep. So
is that, that's true for kids and adults, correct?
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
Sometimes, for little kids, what I recommend is to look into how much, caffeine is in there, any of their chocolates. So dark chocolates can have caffeine in them. So just be careful on caffeine content in there. Kids especially who do not drink coffee or they are not into soda pops, definitely to look into that part. So.
And there's a lot of drinks out there that you think are maybe just sparkling water or flavored water, and there's caffeine in them too.
Right. So definitely read the ingredients and
For sure. So what about now? We've been talking about kids, but what about adults? We seem to have lots and lots of problems of not falling asleep. Everybody complains about only getting, 3 to 4 hours of sleep. Either they're complaining or they're bragging about it sometimes. But what are some of the problems that adults have when it comes to sleeping?
So again, the major problem that we see is what we call as inadequate sleep hygiene. Again, it's the same problem, not going to bed on time, not waking up on time, not following the sleep hygiene recommendations, meaning caffeine, no naps. Again, the same thing that I kind of talked about, exercise during daytime. So we see that as a major problem. But again, on top of that, sometimes that may not be enough. And that's where we will need to do further evaluation for the cause of insomnia and then kind of treat accordingly.
And sleep apnea is a big one, obviously. What are some of the signs of that? And adults and children can get that, correct?
Right. So any age can have sleep apnea. So the symptoms can be different in kids and can be different in adults. So in kids, we could hear snoring. We could probably hear heavy breathing, noisy breathing. There could be struggling to breathe or stopping breathing episodes, or they could just be restless. And then you could hear like intermittent snoring. The intensity of snoring in kids may not be as loud as adults, but still, what we have to watch for would be just not snoring. Also look for noisy breathing and heavy or loud breathing. So in adults, it's mostly snoring. Snoring, stopping breathing episodes, waking up, feeling like gasping, or somebody has told you that you stop breathing when you're asleep, or you wake up feeling like you couldn't breathe, you don't feel rested when you wake up in the morning, you feel sleepy tired during daytime, and you've tried getting 8 hours of sleep, and then that still doesn't help. So those are the kind of, symptoms that we hear mostly in our sleep clinic.
Are there causes for people who are more likely to get sleep apnea?
Right, and in kids mostly it's the tonsils or the adenoids those are enlarged. But again, there could be other things like weight can also play a significant role. Sometimes also depends on if you have any underlying medical conditions. Sometimes that can affect. It all affect when you have sleep apnea, it's mostly the upper airway where there is a collapse happening, upper airway collapse happening. So in adults, the tonsils and adenoids don't play a huge role. Like tonsils, sometimes there could be enlarged tonsils, but we do not recommend like surgery right away, just like how we do it in kids. In adults, it could be because they're with age, like if you have celebrated more birthdays, then the likelihood of having sleep apnea kind of goes up. And again, weight plays a significant role. And also the facial structure, how you're built, those all things plays a significant role.
As far as how you sleep, does that make a difference on how well you sleep? Like what position you're in or what your pillows are like or that type of thing?
Right. What that's a very good question. And I get this kind of questions a lot. So what I tell is that do what work, what works for you. So there is no recommendation from my side on what kind of pillows or, you know, what kind of mattresses one needs to use. So you just have to try and then see what you feel comfortable and then kind of go from there. So people who have sleep apnea, they may sleep better on their side. But again, you know, it's not for everyone.
Okay, makes sense. And is it okay to medicate? I mean, I know with kids, you really don't want to go there. But with adults, is it okay to do that occasionally?
For insomnia?
Yeah.
Right. So it all, again, depends on the cause, right? So mm-hmm. what is causing insomnia is what I think should be treated before deciding on medication. So sometimes it could be that you need medication, but I will suggest talking to your provider before you decide on medicating yourself for insomnia management.
So even like melatonin, is that, because I know a lot of people that use that.
Right. So we do see just not plain melatonin. What I see over the counter is like added some other herbal products on top of it. So melatonin, there have been, again, it's over the counter. It's not regulated by FDA. So when it says melatonin of 2 milligram, we're hoping that's the dose that is in there. So when you take melatonin, you know, it may help you fall asleep. It all depends. And but pure melatonin is, if you have to take melatonin, you know, what I would recommend would be like a pure melatonin rather than mixed with other herbs in it. But again, you know, when you plan to start on any kind of medication, you should definitely talk to your provider that you are starting this, because we need to look into, are you on any other medication? Is there any drug interaction with those medications? Is it okay to take melatonin or not? So that kind of evaluation needs to be done. So I will still recommend, you know, if there is something that you feel like you're having insomnia, you've tried the sleep hygiene, just the regular one doesn't work, then definitely talk to your provider.
We're talking about the importance of sleep and how you or your child or both of you can get a good night's rest. Our guest is Dr. Rachna Tiwari. She's a pediatric sleep specialist with UW Health Kids, and she's also a clinical assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Give us a call. Open lines, 800-642-1234. What's causing you to not get a good night's sleep? I know that if someone's having a problem, it might get to the point where you want to do a sleep study. Can you explain a little bit about what that is and what people can expect when they go there for that?
So the sleep studies can be in lab. Again, in pediatric, we do a lot of in-lab sleep studies. The home sleep studies are the other option. So when you do an in-lab sleep study, you're going to the sleep lab and you're spending your whole night there, you're sleeping in the sleep lab. So we use EEG stickers or EEG probes. In kids, we use stickers, so sticker probes. And then that tells us whether you are awake, what time did you fall asleep, different stages of sleep you went that night. And then we use nasal sensors that senses your breathing pattern. So basically, we're looking for, do you have any apneas, meaning do you stop breathing or do you have any shallow breathings? That is what the nasal sensor helps us record. The other part is you're going to have like snoring mic. There will be some extra leads. Then we check the oxygen level. We look at the heart rate. We look at how well are you, your chest expanding, your abdomen expanding during your sleep study night, as well as your leg movements. So we look at the whole picture to really look into what is causing your arousals at night. Is it sleep apnea? Is it limb movements? Or is it none? You know, if it's none, then that's a good thing to rule out. But again, those things need to be determined when you see a provider in the clinic to really see which way to go. So that's an in-lab sleep study. The home sleep studies are to really look for obstructive sleep apnea. Home sleep study, if you do it, if someone has high likelihood of having sleep apnea, then you do a home sleep study where you take the device home. It does not have any EEG leads. So if you do not sleep well on a home sleep study night, then you probably have to let your provider know about that, because we're not, you know about the total sleep time. But that is what you take home and then kind of look for sleep, obstructive sleep apnea.
I've always wondered, how do people fall asleep with things, you know, coming out of them, stuck on them and in their nose? It's got to be difficult to fall asleep, and you're in a strange spot and you know people are watching you. What do you tell people when they have those misgivings?
Right. So, no, definitely. I do. You know, I have a lot of patients who have anxiety about falling asleep in the sleep lab. So, again, you may feel a little bit that it may going to take a little bit longer to fall asleep, but most of the time people do fall asleep. It may not be exactly like if you fall asleep in 15, 20 minutes at home, it may take a little bit longer. But generally, again, people do fall asleep okay, stay asleep okay. But if you're one of those who, like, if I leave my house and go outside and I just cannot sleep, like let's say if I stay in a hotel and I just don't sleep, then you probably have to bring that up to your provider to really say, to look into what kind of sleep study is a good choice for you.
Oh, that's good. It's kind of an option. I would have a horrible time doing that because I am one of those people. Never sleep on a plane. Takes forever to fall asleep in a hotel room. So yeah, it's good. Yeah. There's options. As far as adults go, we didn't talk about how much sleep we should get in our life. And I know it varies, but what is a general recommendation?
So again, from the National Sleep Foundation, it's 7 to 9 hours for adults. Again, one may be okay sleeping 7 hours, but again, the thing is, how do you feel when you wake up and how do you do throughout the day? If you do well throughout the day, you're rested, you have good energy, you're doing well, then that's the hours of sleep you need.
Okay. So how did you get involved in this particular field of study?
Meaning, why did I choose sleep?
Yeah.
Yeah, now I had an interesting story. So it was during my residency. I had had someone who had what we call as cataplexy from narcolepsy event that happened in the clinic room, and where he kind of like we're talking about something and then it looked like he almost passed out, but it was a cataplexy and I just didn't know what that was. Mm-hmm. And then when we were managing that, later got a diagnosis with narcolepsy with cataplexy, and that made me think, wow, what is this? So kind of started my interest more into sleep. And then here I am.
So explain those two technical words. Well, narcolepsy, we probably have heard of. And the other one was cataplexy.
Cataplexy. Yeah. So there are like very, it's not a common thing. There are some patients who have narcolepsy when they have this, you know, strong, positive sense of emotion, or sometimes even negative sense of emotion, can cause weakness in particular part of their body. So sometimes they could be like they're laughing on something and then they feel weak in their knees, or they get mad at someone and then they feel weak in, you know, certain part of their body. Sometimes it could be jaw, but it's not like symmetrical. It can be asymmetrical. And sometimes if it's extreme, can also, you know, involve major part of your body. It is one feature of narcolepsy. It's not that common, but again, it happened when I was in clinic in front of me. And then, so that was like, for me initially, what is it, you know? And
yeah, that's very unusual. So you were meant to be. What other things do you do in your job? You see mostly children, or do you see adults too?
So, I do both.
Okay.
I do all ages.
All ages. Okay. Yeah. And is there more sleep problems now than when maybe 5 years ago, before, you know, the pandemic, and we were talking with our earlier guest about stress? Are you seeing more now?
So I think when the school was more virtual, we were noticing kids were sleeping longer, like, you know, and they could take nap in between their classes whenever they had break. But now, since the school is in person, when they are not back into their own sleep schedule, it is, again, getting back to what we were seeing in the past.
Okay, so it's really has an effect as far as stress goes.
Definitely with the pandemic, there was a stress was affecting some part of the kids where they couldn't sleep enough hours, but some kids were like, who had those delayed sleep circadian rhythm, they're waking up for school, could take in between naps, and then they were kind of sleeping a little bit longer, because I think with the virtual school it was starting a little bit late, sounded like. We saw like both kind of sides. So
in talking about naps,
Should some kids take them longer? I mean, should everybody take them, or shouldn't we do a nap? Right. I've heard all around. So
right. So for little kids, like less than 5 years old, they need nap. And then it also depends on who's going to, you know, get out of their nap. It all depends on that child. So depending on how they do. But when you are above 5 years old, you generally don't require a nap, like a scheduled nap. In some cultures, I know there is this culture of power naps that they take 10, 20 minutes nap. And then if that doesn't affect their sleep, then, you know, I usually don't tell them don't do it. But generally longer naps are can affect your nighttime sleep. So we don't recommend longer naps.
Yeah, I've heard less than 20 minutes, but you're saying 10 minutes should be?
So, yeah, less than 20 minutes would be fine. So okay. You take that short nap and then you feel like, oh, yeah, this helps me. I'm rested. And it doesn't affect your nighttime sleep. That the thing is, it should not be affecting your nighttime sleep. So generally, if you have to take power nap, do not take it during the later part of the day because it can affect your nighttime sleep.
Well, that makes sense. Now, our culture is one where we don't value like a nap or a midday, you know, rest. Is that something you think is would be good for us to maybe think about doing?
I would love to, right? If you could get a nap at work. But again, yeah, no, definitely in some cultures they have it. It'll be fun.
I think we should try it. Anybody want to volunteer, let us know. And again, if you have a question, we still have time for a question. If you're having problems sleeping, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. So tell us a little bit about the UW Health Kids. So is that like the pediatric?
Yeah, Wisconsin Sleep. Yeah, we have pediatric sleep program over there, and the AFC at Children's Hospital. We have sleep lab is located at the Wisconsin Sleep Research Park area, and then we do have inpatient sleep at the AFCH at the Children's Hospital.
Okay, and how does someone get there? Do they need to have a referral from like a general practitioner or?
Yeah, generally it's a referral that comes from their general practitioner and or sometimes from ENT. We get referrals from different sources.
Does the insurance usually pay for those sleep studies?
Most of the time, I cannot say about all insurances, but most of the time, if there's a valid reason, I think it's covered.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay, well, we've got a couple of calls coming in, but I'm not quite sure if they're ready to go. We're kind of running out of time. But if you want to just give us a rundown again, and you talk about sleep hygiene, which has nothing to do with being clean, give us the outline of what it means to prepare your room and get ready to have a good night's sleep.
Right. So make sure that your room temperature is on the cooler side. We don't want the room temperature being the warmer side. Again, dark, if you can put on night out curtains, that's great. Night light is okay. And if you feel like any outside noises affects your sleep, definitely use some kind of white noise. And again, make sure that, again, same consistent sleep schedule, regular relaxing bedtime routine, and create an environment that is only for sleeping. Again, bed should be comfortable. Again, temperature, getting off of all the technology. If you need, have a light snack before you go to bed. We don't want you to go to bed hungry. Right. So again, exercise regularly, but not too close to bedtime. The best time would be in the morning or late afternoon, but definitely don't do a good physical exercise right before bedtime. Enjoy sunshine in the morning. Spend time outside every day, especially in the morning, because it helps your internal clock to be on track. But again, it's important to limit light exposure in the evening time. So you want more in the morning time and then less in the evening time. Avoid naps if you're having trouble falling asleep at bedtime. Again, it can be developmentally appropriate, but again, those who have issues falling asleep or staying asleep, so definitely avoid taking nap. No caffeine at least 4 to 6 hours prior to bedtime. It has that half-life, so definitely we recommend not to, you know, or be careful about it. And then so yeah, again, what I say, you know, just like the dentist asks you to brush, flush your teeth, or doctors ask you to eat this many fruits and vegetables, or exercise, you know, I generally recommend, you know, ensure healthy sleep habits. as this will help you fall asleep faster, stay asleep, and then wake up more refreshed in the morning.
Okay, well, wonderful. Thank you. And I apologize to our callers who called in a little too late, but I think we might have got to some of those. But again, if they have questions, they should talk to their primary care provider, correct?
Yes, definitely. Okay. Reach out to them and they should be able to track you to the right. Yeah,
wonderful.
Right place to manage you.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Tiwari. We really appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me again.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
We were talking with Dr. Rasha Tiwari, a pediatric sleep specialist with UW Kids Health and a clinical assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Join us tomorrow when we take a look at dragonflies and state parks. That's tomorrow on the Ideas Network. We hope you can join us. And just as a reminder, it's primary election day in Wisconsin. The polls are open until 8 tonight. Find out what's on the ballot and where you can vote by visiting myvote.wi.gov. Thank you again for joining us. Larry will be back tomorrow. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for him. Stay well. Oh,